throat because what I saw was just a war scene. It was something like I'd seen out of the movies. I couldn't believe my eyes. There were officers on the ground, you know, they were bleeding, they were throwing up, they were, you know, they had, I mean, I saw friends with blood all over their faces. I was slipping in people's blood. You know, I was catching people as they fell. It was carnage. It was chaos. I can't even describe what I saw.
Capitol Police Officer Carolyn Edwards, who suffered a traumatic brain injury on January 6th. She was questioned by Republican Congress member Vice Chair Liz Cheney. That does it for today's show and our recap of the first public hearing of the U.S. House Select Committee to investigate the January 6th attack on the United States Capitol. The committee holds its next hearing Monday morning. We will live stream it at 10 a.m. Eastern at democracynow.org. On Monday on Democracy Now!, we will speak with Democracy Now! Co-host Juan Gonzalez about his newly updated edition of the landmark book, Harvest of Empire, A History of Latinos in America. That does it for our show. Democracy Now! Is produced with Renee Feltz, Mike Burke, Dina Guzder, Messiah Rhodes, Nermeen Sheikh, Maria Tarasena, Tammy Warrenoff, Camille Baker, Tarina Nadura, Sam Alkoff, Tamari Astugio, John Hamilton, Rabbi Karen, Honey Masood. I'm Amy Goodman. Stay safe.
You are listening to KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the 2022 Village Building Convergence, happening Friday, June 3rd through Sunday, June 12th from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. daily in Portland and streaming on the web. The 2022 Village Convergence is 10 days of workshops and presentations around the work of placemaking and community enhancement. Again, that's the 2022 Village Building Convergence, happening Friday, June 3rd through Sunday, June 12th from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. daily in Portland and streaming on the web. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is looking for a full-charge bookkeeper. Do you have accounting and administrative experience? Do you enjoy working in a highly collaborative team environment? Are you looking for a workplace with a mission? Or do you know someone who is? Go to kboo.fm to learn more about the essential functions of the full-charge bookkeeper and the qualifications we are looking for. To apply, please email your resume and cover letter to hiring@kboo.org by Sunday, June 12th at midnight. You can also apply by mailing your resume and cover letter to KBOO Radio, 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, 97214. KBOO's financial health is our focus. Help us foster it.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, students around the nation plan to march for gun control Saturday. The House Committee on the January 6th insurrection holds its first public hearings. And international flights into the U.S. will no longer require a negative COVID test. Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Friday, June 10th, 2022. I'm Josh Salem. Portland students and elders plan to march this Saturday in two locations in the city in protest of gun violence and in support of gun control. The March for Our Lives is an event started by the survivors of the Parkland school shooting in 2018, and now, in the wake of the mass shootings in Buffalo, New York, in Uvalde, Texas, and countless others, it's happening again. The Portland March will start at the Portland State University Urban Plaza at 11 a.m. and end at City Hall. There are over 100 marches planned nationwide for Saturday. Protesters want to see gun regulations that are grounded in the experience of gun violence survivors. The federal red flag rule is one priority. If passed, it would prevent people from buying guns if they're known to be a threat to themselves or others. In Oregon, protesters point to Initiative Petition 17 as another priority. The proposed measure would require people to pass a background check, take a gun safety class, and get a permit before buying a gun. More information about the Portland March for Our Lives event and other marches around Oregon and Southwest Washington can be found online at marchforourlives.com. The Gun Violence Prevention Center of Utah will safely dismantle unwanted, unloaded firearms this weekend and turn them into garden implements. Mark Richardson has more.
Gun violence has become an epidemic across America, leaving many people frightened and wondering what can be done about it. A Utah group is taking action with a unique event this weekend to reduce the number of guns on the street. A nonprofit group is hosting a Guns for Gardens event Saturday, where Utahns who no longer want or need their guns can safely surrender them and go home with a new garden tool. Nancy Halden with the Gun Violence Prevention Center of Utah says they are taking the Bible verse "to beat swords into plowshares" literally and turning the firearms into garden implements.
We partnered with an organization out of Colorado called Raw Tools. What they do is take donated, unwanted guns, dismantle them with a chop saw, and then they have a portable forge, and they turn them into tools on the spot.
Halden says their version of the National Guns to Gardens event isn't likely to solve America's gun problem, but is a small step toward reducing the number of dangerous firearms. The event is Saturday afternoon at Grace Presbyterian Church in Sandy, Utah. She says the event is designed to prevent further gun violence from unwanted firearms in households where vulnerable children, adults, and the elderly reside, adding that Utah has one of the highest rates of suicide by gun and gun violence in domestic disputes.
As the number of gun owners has gone up, gun violence has gone up. Addition to that, here in Utah, they passed permitless carry. So you had a lot of first-time gun buyers buying guns because they were afraid and they're not trained.
She says in addition to hosting events like Guns to Gardens, the Gun Violence Prevention Center works to inform and encourage sensible gun ownership.
We're trying to educate those people who choose to have guns about responsible gun ownership, and those people who no longer want their guns, we're trying to urge them to get those guns out of their homes.
Halden says they plan to host similar events in other parts of the state. For more information on Guns to Gardens, go to gvpc.org. I'm Mark Richardson for Utah News Connection.
Globally, and within the U.S., society is teeming with weapons. According to new data published by the Stockholm International Peace Research Institute, world military spending has passed $2 trillion for the first time in history. The U.S., with just over 4% of the world's population, accounts for nearly 40% of all global military spending. At the same time, domestically, there are about 393 million privately owned firearms in the U.S., or, in other words, 120 guns for every 100 Americans. That's the highest rate of any country in the world, and more than double the rate of the next country on the list. Now we go to global citizen commentary on the issue from Portland State Professor Emeritus Mel Gertov. The opinions expressed in the following piece are those of the speaker.
Hello, everyone. America is awash with weapons, and the tragic consequences are before us every day. The world is also awash with weapons, as reported by the Stockholm Peace Research Institute, SIPRI, in Sweden, the leading source for data on military spending and the arms trade. SIPRI's latest report shows that the U.S. remains the world's leading arsenal. President Biden, speaking recently about U.S. arms aid to Ukraine, claimed that the U.S. is the arsenal of democracy. I'll come back to that shortly, but first here are some findings on the global arms situation. As for arms transfers, the U.S. is by far the leading arms exporter at 39% of the world total, followed by Russia and France. China and Germany are a distant fourth and fifth. Europe accounts for 13% of global arms transfers and is the world's major growth region in arms imports. Other regions with significant increases in arms imports are Oceania, especially Australia, and East Asia. The U.S. is the major arms supplier to both Asia and Oceania. Rivalry with China is the principal rationale. The war in Ukraine will add to the U.S. role as the world's leading arms supplier. The latest arms package of about $47 billion to Ukraine makes Kyiv the largest yearly recipient of U.S. military aid of at least the past two decades. The amount is more than twice the largest yearly total ever provided to Afghanistan and about seven times Israel's annual military assistance package. As for military spending, official spending, as reported by governments, shows the United States in the lead, with China, India, the United Kingdom, and Russia following. These five account for 62% of global military spending of about $2.1 trillion in 2021, the first time such spending exceeded $2 trillion. The U.S. accounts for 38% of the world total, spending as much as the next nine countries combined. Total official U.S. spending came to $801 billion in 2021. It will be $853 billion this year. The U.S. military burden, which is to say the percent of GDP, is 3.5% as of last year, three times that of China. U.S. funding for military research and development rose by 24% between 2012 and 2021. Here are some broader implications of these figures. First, the U.S. remains by far the principal military power in world affairs. Its military spending and exports continue to grow, increasingly driven by China's activities, but now also by the war in Ukraine. But we should not forget, as a constant factor, the political power of MAGIC, the military, academic, governmental, industrial complex, particularly in today's new Cold War environment. Second, the slowing of the world economy during the pandemic has only slightly impacted, up or down, global military spending and arms imports. Third, the war in Ukraine is sharply increasing military imports and spending throughout Europe, and there are no prospects for a negotiated end to the war, meaning that there will be ever more sophisticated weapons brought into play. Fourth, an easy prediction, future SIPRI reports in 2023 and beyond will have similar depressing figures on arms transfers and military budgets. They always grow up. Fifth, let's not be deluded about being the arsenal of democracy. We're an arsenal, period, at home as much as abroad. With more guns in Americans' hands than there are people, roughly 400 million privately owned, with 11 million manufactured in 2020 alone, with mass shootings taking more lives each year, 230 so far this year, way more than in any other country, and with murderous attacks on schools that politicians can't or won't stop, we are a country out of control. Demand for guns has surged since the Trump years, and gun manufacturer profits are at an all-time high. The parallels between U.S. arms policy abroad and its domestic counterpart are inescapable. The powerful combined influence of congressional support for an unregulated gun market, the obeisance of right-wing politicians to the National Rifle Association and pro-gun lobbyists, and the impunity of gun manufacturers when mass shootings occur. Our arsenal may help protect some people abroad, such as the Ukrainians, and we know, of course, that it protects dictators, at least as often, but at home, that arsenal is a threat to national security, democracy, and public health. Only by getting rid of at least the automatic weapons do we have any hope of keeping our democracy and our social well-being. I'm Mel Gertow for The Global Citizen. Thanks very much for listening.
The House panel investigating the January 6th riot at the U.S. Capitol building is already blaming former President Trump for the event. Last night, the panel presented the case that the assault was an attempted coup and a direct result of Trump's effort to overturn the 2020 election. More specifically, members said that Trump's repeated lies about election fraud and repeated efforts to stall recognition of Joe Biden's victory led to the attack and threatened American democracy. Testimony repeatedly suggested Trump beckoned supporters to the Capitol on January 6th, the day Congress was to certify the presidential election results. Video clips showed leaders of the extremist groups, the Oath Keepers and Proud Boys, preparing to storm the Capitol to allegedly stand up for Trump. Many rioters told the committee they came to the Capitol because Trump asked them to. Representative Liz Cheney, Republican Wyoming, read an account that said when Trump was told the Capitol mob was chanting for Vice President Mike Pence to be hanged for refusing to block the election results, Trump responded that maybe they were right, that he deserved it. This led to an audible gasp in the hearing room. The riot left more than 100 police officers injured. At least 9 people who were there died during and after the rioting. The Justice Department has arrested and charged more than 800 people involved in the attack. In the weeks ahead, the panel is expected to provide more details about Trump's public campaign to stop the steal and the pressure he put on the Justice Department to reverse his election loss. The investigation has faced obstacles from the start. Republicans attempted to block the formation of an independent body aimed at investigating the January 6th insurrection. Instead, Speaker of the House Nancy Pelosi pushed forward with the creation of the body, rejecting lawmakers who had voted against certifying the election results and eventually naming 7 Democrats and 2 Republicans to the committee. The audience included several lawmakers who were trapped together in the House gallery during the attack. Trump, unapologetic, dismissed the investigation again and even declared on social media that January 6th, quote, represented the greatest movement in the history of our country, end quote. Representative Benny Thompson, Democrat, Mississippi, and chairman of the panel, said, quote, democracy remains in danger. January 6th was the culmination of an attempted coup, a brazen attempt, as one rioter put it shortly after January 6th, to overthrow the government. The violence was no accident, end quote. Congress aims to reduce gun violence through national red flag legislation. The U.S. House holds an initial hearing on the January 6th Capitol insurrection. And the Justice Department announces a civil rights probe against the Louisiana State Police. With more on these stories, it's Nadia Ramlagan with 2022 Talks.
Welcome to 2022 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
Democrats refuse to work with us on legislation that would actually do something, that would actually reduce the rate of gun violence in this country.
Republican Louisiana Representative Mike Johnson spoke Thursday on the House floor. House lawmakers approved national red flag legislation aimed to reduce gun violence in the wake of mass shootings in Uvalde, Texas, Buffalo, New York, and elsewhere. A majority of U.S. adults say it's more important to control gun violence than to protect gun rights, according to a poll released yesterday by NPR, PBS, NewsHour, and Marist. More than half of gun owners surveyed agreed with that sentiment. After months of closed-door investigations, the House January 6th committee held its first hearing with public testimony about what transpired and why during the assault on the U.S. Capitol. Democratic Mississippi Senator Benny Thompson on the country's legacy of slavery, the Ku Klux Klan, lynching, and the events at the Capitol.
I'm reminded of that dark history as I hear voices today try and justify the actions of the insurrectionists.
Wyoming President, Republican Representative, and Vice Chair of the Committee Liz Cheney addressed former President Trump's response to calls for violence.
And aware of the rioters' chance to hang Mike Pence, the President responded with this sentiment, quote, maybe our supporters have the right idea.
House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy and other Republican leaders criticized the January 6th Committee's primetime TV hearing, calling it political gamesmanship.
Now, let's be very clear. The violence at the Capitol that day was wrong, and we have repeatedly denounced it. But keeping the Capitol safe is not the point of Pelosi's illegitimate select committee.
President Biden said the Western Hemisphere should be the most democratic hemisphere in the world as he addressed the 4th CEO Summit of the Americas in Los Angeles on Thursday. Biden talked about the importance of collectively preparing for the next pandemic-type crisis.
The economy of the future will increasingly belong to those who place a premium on resilience and reliability.
The Justice Department has announced it's opening a sweeping civil rights investigation into the Louisiana State Police amid mounting evidence the agency has ignored or concealed evidence of police brutality against mostly black men, including the deadly 2019 arrest of Ronald Green. The federal probe is the first to be launched against a statewide law enforcement agency in more than 2 decades. I'm Nadia Ramlagan for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency, and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after the newscast for Counterspin, your look behind the headlines with fairness and accuracy in reporting. At 6, it's Rising Up with Sonali. Then at 7, Hard Knock Radio. Tonight's weather will be rainy with a low of 60 degrees. Tomorrow's weather will see rain showers as well with a high of 71. Today in history, in 1964, the United States Senate breaks a 75-day filibuster against the Civil Rights Act of 1964, leading to the bill's passage. The quote of the day is from Oscar-winning actress Hattie McDaniel, who was born this day in 1893. McDaniel was the first African-American to win an Oscar. She said, "Putting a little time aside for clean fun and good humor is very necessary to relieve the tensions of our time." Portland International Airport has resumed 4 international flights halted because of the pandemic and added a new one. British Airways flights from PDX to London's Heathrow Airport were supposed to begin on June 1, 2020. That was first postponed until December of 2021, and then the Omicron surge sidelined those plans again. Those flights finally began last week, and year-round service should be available. Delta flights from PDX to Amsterdam resumed last month, after a 2-year pandemic pause. Those flights should also be available year-round. Seasonal flight routes to Frankfurt, Germany, and Reykjavik, Iceland, and aimed at busy summer travel months, have resumed. Those services run through September and October, respectively. Air Canada just restarted service from PDX to Toronto. A few nonstop flights to Mexico and Canada have continued daily or near-daily service throughout the COVID pandemic. PDX is the largest and primary airport for Oregon, accounting for 90% of the state's air travel and more than 95% of its air cargo. The Biden administration is lifting its requirement that international air travelers to the U.S. have a negative COVID-19 test within a day before boarding their flights. A senior administration official spoke today on the condition of anonymity to preview the formal announcement. They said the mandate expires Sunday at 12:01 a.m. ET. The official added, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention has determined that the mandate is no longer necessary. The agency will reevaluate the need for the testing requirement every 90 days. It could be reinstated if a dangerous new variant emerges. Nursing home workers say they aren't getting the raises guaranteed through the funds from the Washington State Legislature at their facility in Renton. Eric Tegetoff has more.
Nursing home workers at a Washington state facility are calling on their employer to raise their wages with money set aside in the legislature's budget for that purpose. SEIU's 775 union members held an informational picket on Wednesday at the Arcadia Medical Resort of Talbot in Renton. The union says the facility isn't using $48 million from lawmakers this year aimed at raising pay at nursing homes. Linda Long is a certified nursing assistant at the facility. She spoke from the rally about working through the pandemic.
So many of our people have left the industry and went to different occupation because why work if you can't get paid? You're risking your life and they're not compensating it.
The informational picket drew a crowd of workers, as well as State Representative Mia Gregerson, a Democrat from SeaTac. Negotiations are ongoing between workers and Arcadia Medical Resort of Talbot. The facility did not return a request for comment before deadline. Long says the nursing home often is understaffed and people are overworked, which does a disservice to the residents who live there.
A lot of people live here and they need to know it's not their only last step in their life. They need to be able to know that they can enjoy any time they have left.
SEIU 775, the union representing workers, criticized the facility's $18 an hour proposal, saying it's below a livable wage in King County, where the cost of living is high. For Washington News Service, I'm Eric Tegedov.
A notable cultural leader and elder died this week. With that story and more, it's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Confederated Salish and Kootenai cultural leader Tony Inkishola died earlier this week at the age of 76. Montana Public Radio's Aaron Bolton has this remembrance.
Inkishola was a key figure in the cultural revival on the Flathead Reservation in the 1970s. He served on the Salish Kalispe Cultural Committee for decades and held the role of committee director since 1995. CSKT Tribal Chairman Tom McDonald says Inkishola's time on the committee and as a tribal councilman in the 1980s touched every part of the tribe's work, including the tribe's takeover of the Salish Kootenai Dam and the expansion of the Natural Resources Department.
Every time we would put together educational material, there was Tony. He was there willing to work on it, be able to talk about the importance of this plant or this animal, talk about the importance of this landscape or a particular site.
Inkishola's cultural knowledge also helped foster the Inkoosim Salish Language School in Arlee. Language teacher Jean Beaverhead says Inkishola was always there to answer questions and was instrumental in preserving many oral stories. But Beaverhead says, like the passing of any elder, some of Inkishola's cultural knowledge will likely be lost.
We have lost so many elders in these last few years. We have lost so much. We still have a few, but not like what we had. And the stories they have were just irreplaceable.
Beyond his cultural work, Inkishola was a Vietnam War veteran and was also known as a fierce community member, always calling youth sports games in his hometown of St. Ignatius. Services will be held in St. Ignatius Friday. For National Native News, I'm Aaron Bolton.
The Washington Supreme Court has temporarily halted evictions for 7 households on Noosac tribal land. The court granted the injunction this week while it decides if it will take up the case. The Cascadia Daily News reports the households involved are part of a group disenrolled from the Noosac Indian tribe and have been facing eviction for months. Their attorney, Gabe Galanda, told KNXK his clients are Filipino and Native and are being singled out in part for their mixed identity. He hopes the residents will be able to stay in their homes this summer. The tribe wants the housing for enrolled tribal members and in a statement said it owns the land, housing, manages the properties, and is the landlord. A decision from the court could come as early as next week. For the first time since the start of the COVID-19 pandemic, the National Congress of American Indians is holding an in-person conference. NCAI's mid-year gathering kicks off this weekend in Anchorage, Alaska, with the theme Thinking Beyond Self-Determination. Tribal leaders from across the country will discuss top issues facing their communities. Alaska is home to nearly half of the more than 570 federally recognized tribes in the U.S. The conference is largely influenced by the Alaska region. Mike Williams is chief of the Akyak Native Community and NCAI's Alaska Region Vice President.
We look forward in engaging conversations about the Violence Against Women's Act and implementing the Alaska Pilot Project to enhance the safety of our communities, land trust issues to reacquire and protect our homeland, and environmental sustainability to secure our ways of life for future generations, and much more.
The packed agenda also includes a youth track. The NCAI Youth Commission has tailored activities and sessions to help develop the next generation of leaders. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
The pandemic has inspired many Americans to re-engage with outdoor activities like bicycling. And with gas prices trending higher, biking to work might have more appeal. Health experts say there are a lot of benefits and also some key points to remember in getting started. Mike Moen reports.
North Dakota has new laws in place to protect bicyclists, including those who ride electric bikes. And with gas prices still going up, one health expert says now might be a good time to consider making the activity part of your daily commute. Fitness advocates and family nurse practitioner Mimi Secor says bicycling has obvious health benefits. Doing it on an everyday basis is especially worthwhile because it's not as taxing on the body. That bodes well when trying to make it through the workday.
You're not taking the hit on your joints like you would jogging or running. So it's a very gentle exercise.
A rural state like North Dakota can require longer commutes for some workers. Secor, an avid cyclist, says electric bikes could work in those situations. She notes they don't require as much effort, but you still have to pedal. During the last legislative session, North Dakota lawmakers approved several changes, including reclassifying e-bikes, giving them more places to roam. And with summer here, Secor says bike rides are a good way to connect with nature before North Dakota winters return, making it harder to venture outdoors.
You're going to notice and experience nature much more on a bicycle than in a car, because you're going to have a more full sensory experience. You're going to see things up close and at a slower pace.
For those who feel intimidated about getting into cycling, Secor suggests starting small by riding around your neighborhood. She also suggests making sure the bike works properly and is safe so that you don't start with a negative experience. Meanwhile, some electric bike manufacturers are launching lines with affordability in mind, but industry officials warn supply chain issues are still putting pressure on prices for all kinds of bikes. Mike Moen, Prairie News Service.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Friday, June 10th, 2022. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news, stories, and tips at 971-245-2158. Our remote production team includes myself, Josh Salem, and Mel Gertov. Our co-producers are Josh Salem and Althea Billings, and our engineer is Otto. Special thanks to Mark Richardson, Antonia Gonzalez, Nadia Ramlagan, Mike Moen, and Eric Tegetoff. The director of the evening news is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282 BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220 HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Josh Salem. All of our KBOO programs, including the evening news, are supported by our members. If you'd like to become a member and support your local community radio station, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for Counterspin.